get started, let me just introduce the members of the committee. In fact, I think I'll let the members of the committee introduce themselves. Bernie, good morning. And just a housekeeping note, folks, I will have to leave here at about a quarter to 11 for an urgent meeting in the district, so I'll turn the gavel over. This isn't a Senate committee, Bernie. This is a House committee. Bernie, can I turn the gavel over you at a quarter to 11 if we're not done? Because I have to take off. No pun intended. Get back to the district. First of all, let's go around the table and introduce ourselves so that the guests know who we are. And let's start with you, Bernie, if we may.
I'm Representative Bernie Leader from northwestern Minnesota. And I did wonder why I'm in here. I co-chaired the relocation of the airport at Palm Airport for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little familiar, I think, with the airport situation.
I'm Representative Bruce Anderson, Wright County. We have several airports, one at Maple Lake, one at Buffalo, and very much interested in what happens in the area of aviation since my military background was in Navy aviation, and now I'm in the Air National Guard also. So.
Representative Dan Searson, I represent just north of St. Cloud area, Sauk Rapids, Sartell. History and aviation.
Emily Johnson, Committee Legislative Assistant.
I'm Representative Mike Beard from Shakopee Prior Lake, and I have a little business in aviation as well as just having an interest in it, particularly how it makes the state go and grow.
And I'm Margaret Amundson, Committee Administrator.
Dan Larson from Bloomington and Richfield. Have the state's largest airport in my district, so that gets my attention on aviation issues.
John Williams, House Research Department.
I'm Dan Kane, DFL Caucus Research, and I'm Representative Buer's constituent. Here to keep an eye on.
I'm glad Dan's here. He's a good one, too. Mr. Thiessen, welcome to the committee. If you want to start your presentation, that would be a good thing.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. First of all, first thing I should note is that all of the money that goes into the aviation trust funds comes from aviation user taxes. And you have a handout in your packet on this presentation if you want to follow along with it. In the first slide, just shows the state airport revenue sources and their legislative authorities. We have the airline flight property tax, which is paid by the airlines in lieu of other taxes on their airplanes and flight property. They don't pay aircraft registration fees or other personal property taxes on their airplanes or flight property, which includes spare engines and airplane parts. The aviation fuel tax is analogous to the motor fuel tax. It's collected on all aviation fuel sold in Minnesota, either special fuel, which is jet fuel, or aviation gasoline. Aircraft registration is, again, analogous to the highway side, the license plates that you buy for your cars. And investment income, money in the state airports fund can be invested by the state investment board, and we get some interest off of those investments. The next sheet just shows, gives some dollar amounts for the revenue. I won't go through all of them at this time, but it shows where our revenue comes from. And the next sheet shows the trend over time. The bump in 2000 to 2002, I'll explain a little later, a good part of it has to do with aircraft registration income that we didn't anticipate. Then the pie chart shows the distribution, where our money comes from as far as the different users. Airline flight property is the biggest single source of income, followed by aircraft registration, then fuel, and then interest on the investments. And I'll talk about the airline flight property tax. And it's paid in lieu of other taxes. Total amount of any one year is determined by the Office of Aeronautics. The legislation gives us the right to name the amount that will be charged. We look at all our income sources, look at our what our revenue needs are, and airline flight property tax is sort of a makeup for the rest of it. That legislation was changed, I think, in the early 90s. It used to be tied to the average mill rate around the state, and the tax was going up at a very rapid rate, and I think the airlines were in part behind getting the change enacted.
Hey, just a moment. Would you explain that to us again? You say you set your budget,
yeah.
Then you use the airline flight property tax to fill in.
Yeah, we look at what we get from the other sources, the fuel tax, the aircraft registration, and our interest income. And then to the extent possible, we don't just take a big chunk and say we're going to charge the airlines this much. There's got to be some restraint on our part, too.
Okay.
But that's the way it works. For example, in the last 2 years, we've set the amount at $7.8 million. We give that to the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue then looks at all the airlines. The flight property tax is charged on the basis of the airline's activity in the state. The airlines that have more operations in the state pay more, like Northwest, Mesaba. Flight property tax.
So this would be any scheduled air carrier then, Mr. Thiessen?
Yeah.
Whether it's Duluth, Rochester, or Thief River Falls.
Yeah.
That activity is all counted and it's prorated accordingly.
Yeah, it's paid directly to us by the airline.
Okay.
And the next graph shows the highest we've ever had is $8.7 million. And then because we had a surplus in the state airports fund, and because of the financial condition of the airline, it was a part of it also that we dropped it down to 7.8. I should mention that in any one year, the amount we collect may not be exactly the amount that we pull revenue to collect because of airline bankruptcies. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we had one airline that inadvertently overreported assessed value and had to reduce their tax, and that was after several of the airlines had paid their tax, so it wasn't going back and retrofitting the whole business.
Quite another question related to this then. Do you measure the activity, for instance, in the year 2000 and assess the tax payable in 2001? Or do you try to collect it in the year that the activity actually occurs?
The tax is due on January 1st of the year that the tax for 2004 was due January 1st. Okay. Revenue keeps track of the airline activity. Determines which airlines pay how much.
Okay.
And then the next is just a listing of the flight property tax that was assessed for 2004. And I might note that U.S. Airways is in bankruptcy, so we haven't received the tax from them. So we're $89,000 short on what the total amount that was set.
Now, these are passenger airlines, Mr.
They also cargo airlines. FedEx is in there.
Yeah, I'm looking for instance, Bemidji Air. They might fly under something else, though.
Bemidji is under contract, I think, to UPS.
Okay. So the UPS would actually pay the fee then?
I assume so, yeah. Flight property tax, as they said, used to account for over half of the revenue, now it counts for close to half. The aviation fuel tax is analogous to the fuel tax you pay on fuel you buy for your car. It's paid by all users, the airlines and the general aviation. In some states, airlines pay at a different rate. In some states, jet fuel is collected at a different rate. Minnesota, it's collected at the single rate, except that it's a graduated scale. Look, I guess you have to go back to the first listing of the revenue shows. I forgot to include a second chart, but the aviation fuel tax is paid on a graduated scale depending on the use. For less than 50,000 gallons, the tax is 5 cents per gallon. And from 50,000 to 150,000, it's 2 cents a gallon. For 150,000 to 200,000 gallons, it's 1 cent a gallon. And after 200,000 gallons, it's half a cent for an amount after that.
And who pays that, actually, Mr. Christie? The airline themselves or the company pumping the fuel?
The airlines, I believe. The airlines take a credit. They don't pay the tax and then get a refund. The smaller users pay the 5 cents or whatever the going rate is at the pump, and then they take a credit on their income tax at the end of the year. The big users, the airlines, and some of the larger corporations that use a lot of fuel will take a credit once they get to that 200,000 gallon level. They'll just take a credit on pay at the half a cent level, so they don't have to, go through the bother of a refund. Tax is collected by the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Tyson. Do you have a breakout of in the graduated scale of which airlines participate at those different levels? Do you have a breakouts available to us, or not necessarily here today, but one that you could get to us?
We don't. I can check with the Department of Revenue. I think they have a know who pays, but I think the airlines by the end of January, I'm pretty sure all the airlines are down to a half a cent.
Mr.
Northwest is probably less than a day.
Representative Larson.
That was my question. I think I'm assuming that the only airline in excess of 200,000 gallons is Northwest Airlines, but I don't know if that's
no,
true.
No, I would think almost anybody who flies heavy iron will be over that eventually, but Northwest makes it in about a half a day, so less than that maybe.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I understand, so that when we talk about the credit, then at the end of the year, December 31st, at the end of the year, taking into account all the fuel that has been pumped in this particular one, and the credit, whether it's over 200,000, it goes to half a cent, then the 4.5 cent credit goes back, so those monies are accumulated throughout the year, and then it's referred back to the...
The large users, the airlines and some of the major corporations, pay at the half cent level once they reach 200,000 gallons. It's the smaller users that use less than 200,000 gallons or less than 100,000 gallons that pay the full tax, and then they're refunded it by at the end of the year on the tax statement.
I want to be sure we understand this point, because this could be an important one going forward. When I taxi up to the pumps and fill my airplane, I'm paying a nickel a gallon, and the FBO that pumps my gas is actually responsible for paying the tax at the end of the month, I think it is, right?
I believe so, yes.
Or are they paying it through the wholesaler, the jobber that brings the load and drops it in their tanks from the refinery?
I think it's the at the point of delivery. I've had different stories on this over the years, but I think it's at the point of delivery, so that the wholesaler charges the FBO, and the FBO passes that on
to us.
Price of gasoline.
So I'm trying to understand then, that's a simple concept to get my arms around. So if I'm an airline, and suppose I'm Sun Country, for instance, and I'm buying my fuel from Signature, or do I buy it directly? How's that work? And when is that tax paid?
I'm not sure.
You understand where I'm trying to go? I'm trying to understand how it works in a big volume.
I think the airlines, I don't think they buy from FBO. I think they buy it directly from a wholesaler. Northwest will buy it directly from Coke or whoever they buy it from.
Well, I know that they're from the refinery to the big airport, there's two pipelines that run there. And I was under the impression there was another somebody who managed that fuel farm for them.
Yeah. Yeah, it is managed by, but they're the ones that distribute it out to the airlines. The fuel farm, there is the single, as you said, a manager.
It oversees that whole thing.
Right.
Okay, now I'm thinking, and again, just because I just want to be sure we understand this as a committee here. Suppose I'm ASI or Elliott Beach, and I'm buying gobs of jet fuel. Any particular user may not be passing 50,000 gallons. The FBO himself is certainly going to go past the 50,000 gallons. Does the discount then apply to the end user, or can the FBO claim it as well? You following me?
Yeah. I guess I'd have to check with revenue on that. I'm not exactly sure how that works.
This is going to be an ongoing conversation over the next okay. 6 or 8 weeks, so why don't you take a note to get us that information on how that works, just so we're completely conversant with what we're kind of contemplating, what we're thinking about. I'm sure that if I was a company and my company was buying more than 50,000, I'd be paying attention to it.
Right.
So make sure that it got applied somewhere. But exactly how that works is important to this committee.
Yeah, I'll find that out.
Now that I've gotten them all disrupted off of this presentation, any other questions from anyone at the moment here? Okay,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of curious, because of the differential between the gasoline tax and states, is that a problem with airlines like it is with motor vehicles as far as filling up or going somewhere else, or is it a real problem? I see North Dakota is much higher than the rest of them, and you know, and we have airports that are right on the border.
Mr. Chair, Representative yes. Leader Lee, I think our tax, once you reach the highest level or the high usage, is less than any of the surrounding states. I believe Wisconsin has like a 3-cent tax. North Dakota has a tax somewhere in that range also.
Well, while we're talking about that line of questioning, thank you for asking that. Where do we stack up versus kind of the surrounding states? On our top end, and you talked a little about the low end, but just for occasional users like me, a nickel a gallon, certainly compared to the highway user tax, sounds pretty light. Mm. Is it indeed, or are we very competitive?
As I said, I think I was checking the website, and I think it goes around the surrounding states, it's like from 3 cents a gallon without a refund. You get 3 cents a gallon no matter how much you use, up to 8 cents a gallon. And some of the states do tax airlines, and some other don't. Some have a different tax rate on jet fuel versus aviation gasoline. And I don't have the figures on that with me. But
make a note of that, too. That's something we're going to want to know here in a couple weeks, too,
yeah,
Dick, if you would.
There is a website that I can, it's, I think, the National Business Aircraft Association.
And BAA has that information?
They have a state tax. They send out a survey form, I think, annually or biannually, mm-hmm. and collect that information and they post it on their website. And I can get those for you.
Okay, okay, proceed. What page are we on here again?
The graph on the aviation fuel tax shows that there was a big bump in 2000. That's because the airline industry is very sensitive to the upturns and downturns in the economy. When the economy is going well, the airlines are making money and flying airplanes. When the economy is down, the airlines cut back on flights and also on the fuel they buy. And we're
2005, I take it's an estimate then.
Correct. Yeah, we've collected I think about $2.2 or $2.3 million. Looks like it'll be about $3.8 to $4 million.
Okay. This will be a fiscal year we're talking about, the state
right.
fiscal year. Okay.
And the aircraft registration tax is paid by the aircraft owner in much the same way as you pay for your license tabs on your car. This has been a difficult tax to kind of forecast over the past few years. In the preceding, about the year 2000, we had $3 to $4.5 million in aircraft registration collections. In 2000, it jumped up to over $7 million and stayed there for 3 or 4 years. We didn't foresee that. Then all of a sudden it dropped off in 2005 to 5.3. And that was also unforeseen. You know, I think one of the problems there may be the, don't have a good handle on it, but the fractional ownership, concept of fractional ownership. This is an idea where a company will buy a number of airplanes rather than corporations buying their own airplanes. A company will buy number of business jets, for example, and they will sell shares of those jets in two companies, and the companies use those as they would their own aircraft. And of course, when they buy the expensive aircraft, they base them in states where they have no aircraft registration or it's irregular. So we're trying to get a handle on exactly how we can do it. It's a national problem. Other states are also experiencing it. And these companies operate in interstate commerce. I don't know what state might be.
Mr. Thessen, if my company bought a share in NetJets and the jets were based anywhere else, and I'm based here, am I responsible for a portion of the registration fee or no? Under our current setup.
If the airplane is in the state, I believe it's 60 days. Would be charged a registration fee, but if it's just in and out, you wouldn't be responsible for that. And that's part of the problem is that
but members, just so you know, part of what we want to consider on this committee, I would like us to consider, is whether we want to visit this topic further for this reason. Basing business aviation, business airplanes in this state is good for the economy at the airports in this state. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a presentation from some heavy-duty FBOs who have lost airplanes to other states because of the registration scenario. They're going to talk to us about what that means in terms of sales and employment and some other scenarios. So this will be very important for us to know. And one of the things we would like to think about is how the NetJet thing is affecting us. Of course, I'm excited about the concept, of course, but we want to know how it impacts us, particularly revenue to aeronautics and how it impacts us for employment base in Minnesota here.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Thessen, how many aircraft, I'll make a comparison between our airport as far as business aircraft station are located here in the state of Minnesota or at the MSP compared to, say, I'm sure Chicago's got more in New York, but where do we rank as far as business aircraft in the state of Minnesota registered with the state? Excuse me.
I don't have those figures, but Minnesota has a fairly high aircraft registration fee. It's 1% of the value, list price of the aircraft. Goes down with a year. It's and some states have a $300 registration or $3,000 registration, so rank fairly high in the amount charged for aircraft registration.
We'll have some specific numbers on that in a couple of weeks, Representative Anderson, but I know overall there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 8,000 airplanes licensed in this state.
It's 5,000, I think.
5,000? Well, it's a range in there somewhere.
Yeah,
which per capita is one of the higher states in the union. We're pretty aviation-oriented state here.
Yeah, I think we'd have to look at how many of those are business jets as far as getting a handle on what the impact of fractional ownership might be. Another possible reason for the decline is that not just the economy. If the identified over several years a kind of a four-year cycle of tax would peak and then go down a little bit and then come back up again in about 4 years. And our theory was that businesses were replacing their fleets on about a four-year cycle. with the economy the way it's been, the way it was, it may have postponed those purchase decisions, and so that maybe going to do that now that the economy is improving.
In looking at the, this is a 12, 13 year track record. You have one earlier back in the pack, but there's not a page number here, but there's a chart. It looks like we took a beginning in 99, we started a real upward trend.
Mm-hmm.
But even the last 2 years, 04, 05, are way ahead of any year ahead prior to 1998. Did we change the rates or just
no.
The valuation of the new airplanes that came
valuation,
into the fleet
I think.
Was so substantial? Okay.
Yeah, the rate hasn't changed in a number of years. And I think it's has to do with more sophisticated aircraft in the fleet rather than the small single-engine piston aircraft. More fins in, more jets. Okay. Yeah.
We'll see.
As I said, the for 4 years, that's also an estimate at this time.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess to that point, when we started out the tax sources at the beginning of the briefing, there was a general figure that was used to assess the total amount of revenue that was being taken in and then to offset the, I believe it was the...
Flight property tax.
When there was that huge jump, was there a reduction in the flight property tax as a result of that? Because of the huge jump in the registration revenues that were accrued?
Yeah, that it followed, I think, the next year. The balance in the aviation truck and the state airports fund increased rapidly in those years when the airline flight property tax was going up. Or the aircraft registration tax was going up, and so we adjusted the tax on the airline flight property tax accordingly. We were trying, we had, I think the balance reached like $17 million, and we were starting to try and spend that down to a balance of about $2.5 million that we'd have kind of as a reserve fund in case we didn't want to spend it all the way down to zero, but we wanted to spend it down to $2.5 million.
I think Representative Leader and I were having an animated discussion when it was 17.9. I remember the number because the governor needed to take $15 million of it to fix a little emergency we were having, and we were having a quite animated discussion about how we got that high and what in the world was going on. So that hence this committee sits here today. So thank you very much in a way.
Representative Severson.
And to that point, I guess my question would be when. We are slated to get that $15 million back in 07. There's some chuckles. Have we got a long-range plan on how we best utilize that for building up of the out-state? And I guess as we're on the topic of finance, the finances are going to continue to come in, and I would assume that those $15 million that we received back would need to be targeted in these next couple years to be able to actually spend down so it doesn't subject of another hiatus.
Well, Representative, or Mr. Tyson, do you have any ideas on that? If you're authorized to speak to that this morning, because we've touched
on it. We haven't really sat down and said this is exactly how we're going to spend the $15 million. But we do recognize that we need to spend the money and that there are projects that will come along. Spend it on. We had it would entail an increase in the our spending authority annually for several years, of course. But we were looking at before the $15 million was taken away, we were looking to spend that down by having an increased appropriation by the year 2007. There would have been a substantial increase in our appropriation.
Just so we're clear on that process, then, we authorize you to pretty much autonomously set these rates and charges. We give the commissioner the authority to sign off on your fee collection, your revenue stream. But then before you can spend it, you have to come back here and actually get authorization to spend the money.
Right.
So the legislature does have some culpability in the fund accruing as high as it some degree we're involved there.
Yeah, and the other thing is that the administration also, all several administrations, not just one, but
yeah, this has been coming for some time.
Yeah, that didn't approve increases in our budget, so
that's interesting.
I think Ray Rod asked for probably $500,000, didn't get approved by the governor's office or somebody. And that's over a period of years. That's not a long administration.
So this money doesn't come from the general tax base. It comes only from user fees and is to be spent on user-related.
Right.
And you still couldn't get authority to increase the spending even though the fund was increasing.
There wasn't. They weren't big increases, but we had proposed some increases in them.
Well, that's just it's important for us to know how that process works. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Tyson, in this time frame when we took $15 million away, did you lose any ability to match federal funds?
No. Maybe slightly, but another thing that happened with federal funds was that Congress increased the federal participation on federal airport projects to 95%. It was at 90, so the communities are getting 95% federal money. So there's practically no need for state funds on any federal project, unless there are items that are not eligible for federal funding, like hangars or things like that.
Okay. Representative Severson.
Having a personal interest in this process and having a desire to acquire some land in a close regional airport, does the federal government, I guess I'm wondering, does the state airport fund purchase those land acquisitions, or is that used through federal 95-5 match?
It actually works both ways. In any case, if the airport is eligible for federal funding, if they buy land now with their own money or with state assistance, it's eligible for federal reimbursement when they have a federal project. For example, if you bought land in 2001 for a runway extension in 2005, you got federal money for the extension in 2005, it will include reimbursement for that.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, proceed.
The fourth source, which is the smallest source, and is the investment income. The statute allows the Commissioner of Transportation to request that the State Investment Board invest monies in the State Airports Fund, and the interest on those investments comes back into the State Airports Fund. It had been running around $1 million, but due to the interest rate drops and the lack of the $15 million taken away, we didn't have as much money to invest, so we're down to somewhere in the $200,000, $250,000 as far as our investment income.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Tyson, in a lot of the departments, sometimes the interest earned goes to the general fund, but here I said it goes to the airports fund. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is that also if you sell bonds or have arbitrage?
I don't think we have bonding authority.
Okay. MAC does, but I don't think you're
honest. MAC does.
You can see the drop-off interest investment income, of course, has been up and down over the years. But it's dropped off because of the lack of funds to invest, for one thing.
That and low interest rates.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
On the flight property tax, we can go back there. This pretty much is the end of your presentation for now. We can start back through it again. Mm-hmm. On the flight property tax, Mr. Tyson, how do we stack up vis-a-vis other states on that? You may have touched on it a little bit on your first pass through, but
I'm not exactly sure. Some states don't tax the airlines
at all.
at all, especially those that don't have an airline based in their state. We have three, Saba, Northwest, Sun Country. So we haven't had any complaints from the airlines about the amount charged. But I don't know exactly what the other what other states might charge. I don't think the surrounding states, North Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, have a charge on
in all
specific property tax charge on the airline.
Kind of like we do with the power plants, because we chase them out of town, so they waive the taxes on them pretty routinely. A question is trying to form. Does anybody else have one while I'm thinking of this? Representative Severson?
I guess I'm kind of wondering in terms of, you know, when you started the presentation, you said that you have fixed numbers and registration and fuel revenues that come in, and then you take the balance and then put that in the property tax, and then disseminate that among players in the state here. How do you determine what your budget is going to be?
The airports, each airport in the state, I should say that all the airport projects are initiated by the airport owner, the city that owns the airport. We don't initiate airport projects or anything like that. So it's the individual cities that initiate the projects. And they put together a five-year capital improvement program. And they submit that to us and to the FAA, and we go over that and pick out projects that are a high priority or, and come up with an estimated cost of those projects. And that's
Mr. Chair, the point.
Representative Severson.
And you're, Mr. Thiessen, you were talking about the appropriations or the actual expenditures approval. So isn't your expenditure capped by the legislature on how much money you can actually spend?
Yeah. But as far as determining what we're going to ask the legislature for, we do that in large part through the capital improvement programs that the city submit to us.
Has it formed there?
Has it won?
Well, what I'm thinking of is, we almost need a historian here because I'm thinking about, you know, when we started asking airplanes or requiring aircraft to register as the aviation business was growing in this state, particularly with our highly progressive registration tax, it'd be one thing for somebody to buy a new Seneca or King Air, quite another thing to buy a new 747 and pay 1% annually the registration fee. That you just couldn't do that. Pretty soon people would be buying airplanes and basing them in Memphis or Detroit or somewhere else instead of here, any place else but here. So I wonder if the flight property tax, how it developed over time and how it's actually levied. I'd understood one time it was based on seats that moved through the terminal or something like that. Can you speak a little bit about the mechanics of how it's applied? And
yeah.
Is there any reason to it?
It previously was based on the average mill rate for the state, whole state of Minnesota. That was applied to the, each airline submits a estimated their assessed values. And the Revenue Department of Revenue uses those assessed values to figure out how much each airline is going to pay. And there was a formula based on the amount of the number of aircraft used in Minnesota as a portion of the whole, the airline's whole fleet.
Okay.
Also, the number of hours flown over Minnesota as the number of hours flown by the whole fleet. And it was a complicated formula, and I don't pretend to understand it, but it was based on the activity of the airline in the state, how many airplanes are used here, and how many flights they have.
Well, the seat mile is one of the basic units of measurement in the industry. I could see where that might have had a part to play, but you're saying this also applied to spares and equipment and things like that also. So, hence the mill rate. Well, okay. But at the end of the day, you take your budget, fuel tax, aircraft registrations, whatever that other number is, that's the number you apply over the value of the flight property that's in the state.
Right.
Okay.
With then, we don't get over.
Okay, but we're going to want to be talking about that eventually. Other questions, Representative Severson?
Mr. Chairman, thanks for your patience. I'm just trying to get my plans on this one. You're talking about
a difficult one.
Is a Part 135 is scheduled?
No.
Part 131.
121
is scheduled. So anybody that's part of 121 becomes subject to the status to pay the flight property tax instead of aircraft registration tax.
It sounds like it's more advantageous to do that than to pay the normal registration fee. So if I was a scheduled carrier, a big charter carrier, I would behoove me to apply, I would think.
Obviously, we have a 747.
Yeah. Somehow to get under the flight property tax scenario instead of the registration fee. Okay, well, I think we're coming to the end of this particular presentation. I do need to go, but are there more questions, more discussion we want to have? Because if it is, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Leader, Representative Leader. If not, I'm going to give this team a homework assignment for our meeting next week. You have in your, first of all, I gave everyone the legislative overview of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, a little light reading. If you kind of look through that and be thinking about how that whole thing works. We're going to take that up here in the next couple of weeks. Also, you each get this set via the taxpayers of the Minnesota statutes. Chapter 473 is a fascinating read. It talks about metropolitan governance, particularly as concerning us as the Metropolitan Airport Commission statutes that are here. The report that the legislative auditor gives a little more history and background about things the way they used to be and up to how it is today. And I just would like you to be familiar with Chapter 473, particularly the subsections that apply to Metropolitan Air Force governance. Tyson, I'm not going to butcher your name much longer, but thank you for coming up here this morning on brief notice. We're going to want to talk about a few of the questions I left with you there. And another one we're going to want to bring up with you here in the near future regards your budget for next year. I know I've had some quiet talks with your director about a potential shortfall because the $15 million is missing. That all of a sudden we have what looks like a red ink coming up in your aeronautics budget, which may be fixable by unallocating some money that we required you to spend that apparently you're not able to with the Alexander radar site.
Right.
So yeah. We'll want to hear about that as well. Okay. Next Monday, let's just announce it right now. Next Monday at 10 o'clock, committee members, if you could put that in your schedules, and we'll be announcing the agenda a little later this week. Anybody else in the audience that feels compelled to speak for a moment before we wrap this up for today? Seeing none, I'll just declare us adjourned, and we'll see you next week.